Hello, and welcome to the March 2024 edition of the Healthy Intersections podcast. I'm Lisa Lines, a senior health services researcher at RTI International and the host for this podcast. I'm also the producer of the podcast and co-editor at the Medical Care Blog, which is where we are hosted and where you'll find the video for this podcast. And today we're going to be going through some really interesting visual aids and some maps. And so I hope that if you're just listening on Spotify or Apple or wherever you might be getting your fine podcast content, that you'll actually go back to your computer and go to themedicalcareblog.com and check out the video for this podcast. Let me say our topic today is actually a pretty serious one. So we're talking today about the fourth anniversary of the COVID-19 pandemic declaration of a global pandemic and emergency. And we're talking today about excess mortality during the 3 years from 2020 to 2022. This is an analysis we've been working on for a couple of years now. It's really important for us to learn the lessons from COVID-19. Of course, if we don't learn those lessons, we'll just repeat them, right? So I'm hoping that with this podcast and with our forthcoming publications, we'll be putting together, we have a paper that we're submitting and hopefully going to be presenting at Academy Health later this year. We hope that with this work, we can draw some connections to between things that maybe have been missed in all the conversation about COVID-19. So we hope we can shed some fresh light on this very important topic that I know many of us are probably pretty tired of hearing about, but yet we must we really must study this stuff because you know, over 1.1 million people died so far, and you know, as of earlier this year, still, you know, one of the major causes of death. We're still losing people unnecessarily to COVID-19 because of low vaccination booster rates. And so it's important for public health to really try to message the consequences of various actions that we've taken across the past 4 years. So with me today, I am delighted to share, we have two wonderful researchers at RTI International and also current students, and I think they'll have a lot of interesting things to share. First, we have Christina Van Hall. Christina, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Christina. I have been working at RTI for about 2 years, and I just completed my master's degree, and I started a PhD program. Both the master's and the PhD are in biomedical informatics, and I'll pass it over to Nate.
Yeah, Nate, hi, welcome, and please introduce yourself.
Hello. Yeah, I'm Nate, and I've also been at RTI for about 2 years in the health practice area as an economist. I have a degree in statistics and am happy to be here talking.
Wonderful. Thanks. And happy to have you both here. So as we get started into the discussion, I want to start by sharing a map. Let's zoom all the way out and look across the whole globe at the change in life expectancy. Here we are looking at 2019 to 2021, and you can see the U.S. there in peach with between 2 and 3 years of lost life expectancy. I wonder, Christina, do you have any reactions to this map?
I think it shows an interesting trend, and I think it illustrates how COVID may have accelerated certain stressors on a particular health institutions, such as the health system in the U.S. We already had a nursing shortage before COVID killed a lot of nurses. Likewise, in the U.K., there was a nursing shortage. They actually asked quite a few retired nurses to come back, and they lost quite a few nurses during the pandemic. And I know that they still have a health worker shortage that's quite significant.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that some in this podcast, actually, the sort of the capacity of the healthcare system to handle something like this. You know, it's something that we've talked about, you know, in preparations for something like this. Public health planning around, you know, pandemics is, legendary. And yet when the actual deal happened, a once in a generation or even maybe once in 50 years kind of a deal, everything kind of fell apart. And that's a sad reality that we have to face. And I want to point our attention to these blue zones. So we can see Australia, China, Japan, some of the Nordic countries are colored in blue because they actually showed an increase in life expectancy over the 3 year period that they're looking at there. Nate, any thoughts on the increased life expectancy during the pandemic? What was going on there, do you think?
Yeah, it definitely makes me curious, I guess, to learn more about exactly what policies were implemented. I recall hearing a lot in the news cycle about, for example, in China, the zero COVID policy that was implemented with very, very strict lockdowns. And then similarly in Australia, definitely recall hearing about a pretty, I guess, strong closure of the borders to any travel in and out of the country. So definitely, I guess, curious to learn more about exactly how those particular policies were implemented and why they may have not been impacted by the pandemic as much as, say, some of the countries that you see here in the red.
And in the case of Japan, masking is normalized there and has been for quite some time. So I think that's one really big difference between China, Japan, and the US and other countries in terms of kind of normalized behaviors that are protective against infection. So as we turn our attention to the United States, I thought it might be good to kind of again stay at that zoomed out level. And I want to show you all a graph of state level excess mortality for a different 3 year period. So our period was, we began January 1st, 2020 through the December 31st of 2022. And before we start talking about the actual results, maybe actually we should talk about the methods. So not to go into huge amounts of detail, but Nate, tell us about, first of all, why did we look at excess mortality instead of COVID-19 mortality?
Yeah, so COVID-19 mortality has been found to often underrepresent the impact of the pandemic on life expectancy. So while just a straight count of COVID-19 deaths is going to measure, say, folks that were listed as having COVID as a cause of death, excess mortality allows you to actually be able to see how many people died over a period of time compared to how many were expected to die beyond just folks that were explicitly listed as having passed away due to COVID-19.
Very helpful. And so we started with a scan of sort of different methods, right? But we landed on one particular method. Want to tell us about more about that, Nate?
Yeah, so what we ended up doing is following a method that the publication The Economist used to track excess mortality at the states and the country level, where they looked at in each region how many people died every year leading up to the pandemic, and then basically trended that forward to the pandemic years to get your baseline of how many people in the region that they expected to die. Then you take the actual number of deaths that were recorded, whether due to COVID-19 or not, just the straight number of deaths that actually happened in that period, subtract the expected deaths from that, and we end up with our excess deaths number. What we ended up doing for this work is we took that methodology that they had used at the state and the country level, and we applied that to the county level. So looking at from 2014 to 2019 before the pandemic, how many people died in each county in the United States, trended that forward to 2020 through 2022 to get our count of how many folks that we expected to die from the pandemic during those years. And then finally, subtracted the actual deaths over the pandemic years to get our excess deaths for each county.
And just like with that global burden of disease map, we also had some negative excess mortality, right?
Yeah, that's right. When you go about this methodology, for a handful of counties, I want to say it was within around 2% of counties that we looked at, actually ended up finding that less people died during the pandemic years than expected, which was I guess an interesting finding to track and look at, and one that, again, like you cannot find if just looking at straight COVID-19 deaths.
Yes, exactly right. And the CDC's methodology for doing this sort of excess mortality estimation, they actually recode negatives to zero. So, Christina, what do you think about that approach compared to ours?
I think it demonstrates that the CDC's focus is different from ours. Our results focus on a predictive model where we try to see which variables impact the or affect the outcomes of for our prediction for excess deaths. And the CDC, what they're looking at is sort of the negatives, the disease burden of places, the impacts of a disease on a place. And so it's appropriate for them to maybe take negative excess mortality values and replace them with zero because for them it's objectively the same. They are there to see which places are doing the worst and offer more support there. And so that aligns with their mission, but our mission is a little bit different.
Yeah, I think we can learn a lot actually in some ways from places with negative mortality. I think one of the interesting things we did discover is that of the 2% of places with negative excess mortality in our analysis here, we looked at population density. That's important to note. I mean, we can't really do much about that. I mean, it's not really modifiable, population density, but even so, it is, it goes back to classic epidemiology. For a contagious disease, if you pack a bunch of people into a place, there are going to be more cases. So let's talk about the state level results. A lot of the discussion during the pandemic was kind of real time. And so, we didn't have the benefit of hindsight. But now we do. We can actually go and look at, excess mortality across the 3 year period that we're talking about, and look at it by state. And this bar graph has all of the states ordered, from most least to most in terms of excess mortality. These are mortality rates per 100,000. And so down here at the very bottom of the scale is North Dakota with 41 per 100,000. Next is South Dakota with double the rate, about 80 per 100,000. So North Dakota is a real outlier there. And then on the other end, we have Arizona, Mississippi, New Mexico being the highest excess mortality rate during the pandemic, 562.7. So 14-fold difference between those two states in terms of the excess mortality burden. So Christina, from your perspective, what kinds of lessons can we learn from this, or what is this telling us?
This tells us a couple things. A lot of the lockdown policies were implemented statewide, but not necessarily enforced statewide. And so that could have played a role. Also, it should be noted that New Mexico has a lot of desert, and so most of their population is packed into a few major cities. Whereas North Dakota, the population is very spread out and quite less packed in, which will impact the spread of the disease. And so, if you also think about Arizona, it's very similar to New Mexico in the sense that it is primarily desert with a few major cities that are all packed together.
And Nate, you
So,
were actually living in Arizona during the pandemic, right? What was it like for you there?
yes, yeah, I was in the Phoenix area. It was interesting. I guess perhaps at the time, everything is anecdotal. At the time, it didn't necessarily feel like, oh, wow, I will one day look back and see that Arizona has the third highest excess mortality out of any state. Yeah, it was interesting to be there. I mean, kind of as Christina said, very much packed into a couple of population hubs around the state in Phoenix and Tucson. I mean, with the bulk of the pandemic originally hitting in March, and then I guess the first big wave lasting throughout the entire summer. Whereas in some states, there's a pretty good opportunity to go socialize in the afternoons in the nice summer weather. In Phoenix, it's 110 degrees in the afternoon in the summer. And so I, again, not knowing the exact causes, I wonder if there's perhaps less adherence to some of the indoor gathering restrictions that were put into place when folks don't want to gather outside in the 110 degree weather.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to me, during the pandemic, everybody was talking about the cities. New York got hit really hard, but it is currently, in this ranking below a bunch of other states. And so Texas has a higher excess mortality rate. But during the pandemic, was anybody saying that Texas was going to have, a higher burden from this? I don't think so, but Christina, you were there during the pandemic
Oh,
in
yes.
Texas. Tell us what it was like for you during those years.
Oh, so I live in Houston, and so it's a major population area. I think in our finer grain results, Houston ended up being sort of middle of the pack, so not the worst, not the best. But what's interesting is that some of our more rural counties, where it's mostly desert or mostly forest, we saw in some cases negative excess mortality, whereas in like more metropolitan areas like Houston and the surrounding counties, it was more in the red, so we had excess mortality.
Yeah, so our methodology, we're taking these predicted or estimated excess mortality rates, and then we're actually predicting them using the random forest algorithm. Most of the time, if we can, we want to try and drill down to the neighborhood level. And so we use this approach of using social determinants and epidemiology factors, which we had maybe 12 or 13 different measures in that COVID-19 domain. Is that right,
Oh,
Christina? Something like
yeah,
that.
something like that.
Yeah. And so, in our modeling, we were actually predicting the neighborhood level impact of COVID-19 and other situations during the pandemic years. So we're talking about other situations like, Christina, you have an example about cancer, right? Tell us about that.
Right. So when we talk about excess mortality, people tend to go, well, why didn't you look at just COVID deaths? And so excess mortality is meant to encompass a greater swath of people who were still affected by COVID, who may have, let's say, with the cancer example, their cancer treatment was either canceled or delayed, or their diagnosis was delayed as a result of COVID and the medical a strain on the medical system, but their deaths may not have directly been a cause of COVID. I mean, if they had cancer, they probably officially died of the cancer. And so in this case, it would be an excess death from COVID-19, but it would not be an official death because the cause of death was not COVID-19, it was cancer in this case.
Right,
And this
right.
applies to other diseases as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think there was a lot of foregone care during the pandemic. And, we've done a little bit of a deep dive in New Mexico, which, as you can see, is largely colored in the darkest, the top quartile of excess mortality rates across the US. A little bit of a blue zone here, And up here, maybe that's Taos, I'm not sure. A little bit of a lighter zone there. But for the most part, New Mexico, every single county but one is considered a underserved medical area, so medical shortage area, much larger population than North Dakota, but only one more hospital. And now we can actually see the Texas map where you were talking about some of those blue zones. So Christina, you're saying that these are mostly deserts or piney woods, woods, that kind of
Yes.
thing.
So yeah, West Texas has a lot of desert. It's not highly populated. And then North Texas, we have the Panhandle and the Piney Woods. And so that would leave a lot of land that is more vacant than, say, Houston, Texas, or Austin, or Dallas.
Yeah, so you're here in Houston. What's going on here in east of Port Arthur and south of Lake Charles?
If
Some
you actually drive through there,
there's no one there.
there's like
It's
three lakes and
a wildlife
desert
refuge.
is, and there's no one there except
Wetlands.
I drove through there once to get to Louisiana, and like at
As you
one
do.
point, they had some sort of wild land bridge over the swamp, and
Wow. Okay.
yeah, I don't
So
know.
this is the kind of thing where if you just look at the map and you see, oh, there's a big area with a nice outcome, negative excess mortality. It's a blue zone. Oh, but nobody actually lives there. So that's the thing to remember, folks. As we are zoomed out and you see these great big huge blue areas, well, no one's actually living in those areas for the most part. I mean, some people are, but like I said earlier, population density of approximately 300 in those blue zones.
Didn't you find one, I believe it was a tract or a county where you were like, oh, that's where Los Alamos is, and it was blue.
Yeah, that was yes. In New Mexico, one of the blue zones is Los Alamos, and the other is there on the border. Where what else do we want to say about this map and these results across the country? Any surprises in this work for you?
I was kind of surprised about New York, the state, not the city. Everyone heard about New York City and their very tragic losses. But even in upstate New York, like I went to college in Troy, New York, and my undergrad had very strict COVID policies. So if we zoom into Troy, it's still not the greatest.
No. I used to live in Schenectady, and I can tell you
Schenectady did
it's a
bad.
distressed community. It's really quite
Yeah.
distressed. When I was growing up there, it was already getting kind of distressed, and now it's really quite distressed. I don't know about Troy. I imagine it looks like there's quite a dividing line here between one part of Troy and the other.
So there's a river that sort of splits the area in two, if you notice. And so my school,
It's here,
I think,
RPI.
yeah, the RPI, it was in a red zone, wasn't it? Yeah, red zone. And my school was super strict. They only invited half of their students back. Everyone had a mask. The mask policies were super strict and super enforced. You had to get tested twice a week for COVID, and you had to quarantine for 2 weeks in your dorm, and they left you meals outside your door. And yeah, it was strict. I don't necessarily know about the wider residents, but I was kind of surprised by that result because I was like, that policy was super duper strict.
Well, again, this may be deaths from other causes. I mean, this is an older population in this area,
Oh, definitely. That could
It's kind of the
be
Rust Belt almost,
a little bit,
along the
yeah.
Erie Canal area. It's like, I mean,
I gotta say, housing was cheap there.
yes, it's a very inexpensive place to live, for sure. And I don't know if you've been to Buffalo, but very inexpensive. And I think part of the it's crazy to see just south of Rochester. Rochester is a really segregated city, one of the most segregated mid-level or mid-population cities And there's this interesting little blue zone down here. Probably nobody lives there. Or people who lived there were really already healthy or were good about vaccinations and staying away from other people. And so as we
Right.
go west, we see some of these large tracts with low population, but also, I mean, the Midwest in general seems to have been largely well off, except in a few places.
Right. Let's see. What zoom in on that spot kind of near above Texas. That's the border of Nebraska and somewhere else.
Yeah, there's Wichita.
I was going to say that looks like some of the major cities in the Midwest. Interesting that there was a red splotch over that national park kind of area.
Yeah.
It was pretty interesting though. And oh, we're near tribal lands for some of that.
Yeah, we should talk about that. I mean, one of the things that's important to note about, northern, northwestern New Mexico, northeastern Arizona, this is all tribal land here. I was actually out there last fall, and I actually visited the Four Corners, and on the Navajo reservations, people were still wearing masks. I was surprised to see it, but obviously their communities were hard hit.
Yeah, living in Phoenix during the early days of the pandemic, that was frequently in the news cycle of how hard the Navajo Nation in the corner of Arizona was being hit by the pandemic. I want to say the worst if you look at like deaths per capita, I think, in the entire country.
You think about some of the other podcasts that we've done, we've actually talked a little bit about this, that there are open pit mines up there, that the EPA has known about for decades and still hasn't cleaned up. No one's cleaned it up. There's a lot of, historical trauma in that area. And today, there are people living in places where you have to drive 50 miles just to get water one way. So really, I mean, we're starting from a very different place than others in other places. And
Yes, and
yeah.
the COVID did take its toll on people with pre-existing health conditions. I remember some of my family members got vaccinated early because they had lung conditions and heart conditions.
So anything surprise you, Nate, about this analysis?
I think just how, if we look at the full map, just how difficult that it is to make kind of, I guess, wide conclusions. Because, like, for example, when we were previously hovering over Texas and we were looking at Dallas, Austin, and Houston, we saw that we had lower excess mortality in these big hubs than the surrounding areas that are a little bit more rural. But then when we look at other areas, like for example, you were looking at Buffalo and Rochester previously, and it looks like the population hubs were the ones with higher excess mortality, or as the less populated areas had lower excess mortality. So I think that's probably my meta takeaway than being an actual takeaway, but just kind of like how I guess how difficult it is to make just like broad sweeping conclusions about this, and how it seems to really be dependent on what specifically is happening in a locality than just kind of like, I guess, easy, I don't know if stereotypes is the word that I'm looking for, but just kind of like easy, I guess, categorizations to fall back on.
Exactly. And this is a key, public health principle, that public health is local. It is incredibly driven by local conditions. And many of those conditions are outside of both our own control and the control of the providers that care for us. And so, I mean, the burdens of a new infectious disease that kind of preyed on people with weakened immune systems, in a sense, that fell unequally across the US because the populations vary across the US and how sick they are to begin with, right? We see across the Southeast, for example, sort of from Dallas to, North Carolina almost, this belt where, when we dive into the characteristics of people living in these communities, we see largely concentrated racial minorities or minoritized populations, a lot of poverty, much higher poverty than in, for example, the West, where you have similar places with large concentrations of people of color, black and brown people, but not the same level of poverty. And that's the thing that really, that intersectionality. I mean, all of this is happening at once, right? The policies are happening that are outside of our control and that are, absolutely affecting our health. And then, down at the local level, where we live, whether we have sidewalks or not, whether the air pollution is bad, whether whether there's a toxic waste facility down the street, in my case, a refinery. All of these things are so local, and the need to actually understand these things is what drives our work, I think, in a lot of ways. So with that, I think we are ready to wrap up. I want to stop the share here and thank you both so much for joining us today on this podcast. It's great to have you on. We love talking with students on the podcast. So if you're out there hearing or looking at this podcast, and you're interested in being on the podcast, send us an email. There's an email address at the very end in the credits on the video. Or you can contact us through the contact form on themedicalcareblog.com. And don't forget to subscribe because it's really easy. Then you just put your email address in and you'll just get an email when we update and when our latest content is out. We publish on the Medical Care Blog every week, and this podcast is monthly. So I hope you'll be around for the next time. Next time, we'll be talking more about some of these analyses that we've been doing, looking at neighborhoods. And with that, any final words, Christina?
Oh, I think that about wraps it up. I think it should be noted that we should start looking at more granular analyses for public health crises, and that this doesn't need necessarily apply to even just COVID. I mean, we have other public health issues going on. For instance, I believe it's a chlamydia epidemic. And so it's worth taking a more granular approach. And this project did take years, so
Yes, it
like
did.
we did get the chance to optimize for predictive analysis the way that some other researchers might not have because they were doing at the time analyses.
And Nate, any final thoughts from you?
No, I don't think so. But enjoyed discussing it. I'd say Christina summed up well the need for granular looks at public health items. But yeah, enjoyed talking about this.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a and you're an economist. There's a whole other story about the economic recovery, and I think to that point, you cannot have a healthy economy without a healthy population, and so that's where these things intersect, and we're all about the intersections here at Healthy Intersections, the podcast. Again, thank you so much, and thanks everyone. Take care.